Is there anything in the chanting book about stream enterers, non-returners, arahants? Other question, in what way is the chanting book organized? Why does it start with evening chanting? And how does chanting support my practice? There's only a cryptic reference to, what's that phrase?
The four pairs, the eight kinds.
Yeah, the four pairs, the eight kinds of noble beings. So that most people, what is the four pairs, the eight kinds of noble beings? So it's the stream enterers, once returners, non-returners, arhants, but also both path and fruit, sort of the. So it comes in these pairs, a path and fruit for each stage of liberation. So it's only that kind of cryptic reference. Who knows why they started with evening chanting? Probably was something that they thought was a good idea at the time. You know why? Could be. But that's also what they use in the monastery, and hopefully the monastery starts in the morning. The chanting that we do is a translation, like the evening chanting, morning chanting, is a translation of, it's from the Pali, but it was, written in Thailand about over 100 years ago. And so it was a kind of a writing. There's a lot of it that is particularly in the morning chanting, the recollections. Those are sort of passages that are kind of lifted from the suttas, when the reference to the Buddha, to the Dhamma, the Sangha, the recollections are sort of cherry picked from the suttas. So that is. Whereas, say, like the evening chanting, there's some of that, but the longer chants are verses that have been written, devotional verses that have been written. It was done by the, I'm not sure if he was the Supreme Patriarch at the time, but he was a royal prince who ordained and then later became, it was very learned, an educating innovator and a reformer. And so he set up a whole curriculum of study for the Thai Sangha. He wrote a whole new books on the discipline. He wrote the chanting. So he was a prolific scholar, and we inherit that today. Of course, there's also in the chanting book. There's many of the recollections are straight from the suttas, Metta Sutta, the Mangala Sutta, all the highest blessings. The chant on the four Brahma Viharas is straight from the suttas. So there's much that, as well as the three cardinal discourses, there's some which are ancient, say like the dedication of a blessing, the sharing of blessings. Well, that's a chant that comes from very early years of the Theravada in Sri Lanka. So it has been passed on through Sri Lanka, was picked up in Thailand. So there's a lot of sutta-based, scriptural-based, but then there's also some devotional things that are written. The chanting in terms of supporting our practice, there's lots of it that's embedded in there that are when one's chanting it, it reverberates through the mind, and there's recollections of themes of Dhamma, there's recollections that are conducive to a sense of well-being and confidence, a sense of saddha. There's aspects that by chanting, this one having to put forth effort in a consistent way for a period of time for the chanting, it is for arousing of energy. There's a mindfulness that is needed when one is chanting in a group. So there's lots of benefits that can come from the chanting. I remember reading Ajahn Mahabua, describing or recounting an occasion when, and he was what he was recounting was, say, Ajahn Mun's practice. Ajahn Mun is this kind of the grandfather of the Thai forest tradition. He really reinvigorated the practice, and he's you see, there's only about four pictures of him, and they're all incredibly austere and stern, and he's renowned for his prowess in meditation skills, psychic powers. His sort of ferocity in training his disciples. But the part of his daily routine, the evening would be to chant for about an hour before he started meditating. But he would chant alone, and so that Ajahn Mahabua would hear chanting coming from his dwelling place. And Ajahn Mahabua relates that he wanted to know what Ajahn Mun was chanting. What were his favorite chants? So that he trying to sneak up, getting close to the dwelling place in the forest, getting close enough to make out what it was. Then Ajahn Mun stopped chanting, and then he back up. And then Ajahn Mun would start chanting again. So he'd come a bit closer and try to get it. Ajahn Mun would stop chanting. So that of course, is... So then after that, he stopped trying to figure it out. But I thought it's interesting in the sense of this austere, adept meditator is... Yeah, chanting was considered to be an ordinary part of his practice and meditation practice.